Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And it is all about focus on full compliance with the Constitution. Now, we got this campaign. It's our only champion for the Constitution. And who knows, maybe Tom Macy will actually decide to really upset the org card and start running a campaign right now for president with a call for, we need to get this government back into alignment with the Constitution, and this is how we're going to do it. And he can listen to my 13-part show of how a constitutional president can actually change the course of this country and save it. He can't do it himself, but he can lead. Anyway, but the person that is currently in the election process for 2026 is Jerry Wistrand. And so I would beseech you, there we go, I would beseech you to go reach out to Jerry, give him some financial, $20. And actually $20 is only a few gallons of gas nowadays. Well, in Missouri, it's obviously going to be probably 2-3 more gallons of gas than it would be maybe in Washington and California. Nevertheless, every gallon helps. And getting that message out and helping him is paramount. And I'm scratching my head to try to figure out when we can probably get some time to bring him back on to kind of talk about how his campaign is going. I believe the primary is in August. All that being said, folks, please support champions of the Constitution. If they do not have a signed pledge demanding or basically asserting that they will demand full compliance and they will fully comply to the Constitution in office, then they're not worth voting for. I'm sorry. They're willing to compromise and they don't want to be held accountable. We need men and women in office that are willing to be held accountable. Imagine, folks, imagine if everybody in office had the integrity of saying, I want you to hold me accountable to this oath, to this legal, requirement of supporting this Constitution. What would America be like if we had that caliber of people in office? I don't even think that they had that focus back in Jefferson, George Washington's day. I think these were just good, moral people, and they stretched their limits. They went out there and pulled the taffy, so to speak. Anyway, we've got a lot of content we need to get through. We're getting through. We're probably 2/3 way through the Pennsylvania ratification debates. But before we do, welcome back, Sean. And as a matter of fact, we've got to go back. There's two go-backs that I think we want to cover. And one was that I went through off the top of my head and rattled off a bunch of amendments that were state-originated. And actually, if you go do the research, what did you find out, Sean?
I found out that, or the source that I went to said that all 33 amendments proposed for ratification originated in Congress, not with the states.
So
the process for states to initiate amendments has never been successfully used.
Okay, so in other words, what they're doing is they're isolating that the two paths are exclusive. In other words, Congress is, I'm guessing that in their paradigm, Congress is legally bound not to listen to any promptings from the states on picking up an issue, such as women's suffrage. And the bottom line, that's not true. When we look at the Bill of Rights, Congress, as a matter of fact, we've gone through this before, but we haven't, you and I, Sean. And maybe we'll find the time, because maybe I need to do this in looking at this Bill of Rights. Maybe we need to read what Madison said and how Congress basically discarded him. And what ended up happening, the amendments that they got for the Bill of Rights came from where? Well, that tells you that it came from Congress. Actually, Congress did a data call. They went out and they asked every state, what amendments would you like to see? We're working on a Bill of Rights. They had to signal the states to stop the states from coming in petitioning for a constitutional convention because they realized the threat from Clinton and Henry, what they were trying to do. So to shut everybody up and to actually move this forward, and this actually helped because when they were in New York and Clinton and the New York legislature basically descended upon Congress, you know, made something with a petition calling for a constitutional convention. About a week or two later, it came up from Patrick Henry. I don't know who the governor was at the time, but it came up from the state legislature of Virginia that they were petitioning for a constitutional convention. In between that time, Madison basically said, hey, come on, we need to do this. All of the states were asking for amendments. Almost all of them were asking for amendments. We need to do this. And they said, why? We got a great system here. Let's just kick the tires and see what we can do with this baby. You know, we got to check this thing out. Maybe in a couple of years, maybe 5-10 years from now, we'll consider amendments. And so Madison, you know, just instead of poking him in the eye any further, he waited. And when Virginia's petition came in, he said, how many more petitions do you need to understand that the states were pretty adamant about having a Bill of Rights? And I think at that point in time, they basically said, okay, we'll create a subcommittee and you guys can go do the discovery and so forth. Roger Sherman, him, and whoever else was on that committee went off and started basically doing a data call and forming a Bill of Rights. They sent out to every state, what do you want? What would you like? Every state that was in the Union. So North Carolina and Rhode Island were not included in that query, if I'm correct. And every state that I know of, because this is one of the interesting things, every state came back and wished to remove or strike out religious tests, that there should be no religious tests in Article 6. They said, get rid of that. We would like to have our own religious tests. And Madison and, well, I don't know if it was Madison that killed it or both him and Sherman, because they were both very like-minded. They didn't want to see this nation going down this path of, you know, whose Bible and whose test and whose doctrine is holier than thou. And so that's why they wanted to make sure, and they didn't, so they didn't create that amendment. So they denied that one amendment. But everything else they kind of put together, and we actually went through some of the amendments and saw, I think Maryland was one, or Pennsylvania. It was Pennsylvania that was talking about the apportionment. But nevertheless, those amendments were consolidated, and they basically sent those amendments out. So did those amendments originate from Congress? No. Congress was the one that put them together and submitted them. But the idea of a Bill of Rights and what to include in that came from the states. It's the same thing with women's suffrage. Women's suffrage started getting very popular. Wyoming was a state that actually already allowed women's suffrage, which is one of the reasons why they came in without going through Congress, and they just went ahead and had their convention, did their constitution, and they formed their government, and they said, hey, we want to be admitted. We've already done all this stuff. Admit us. Idaho did the same thing. I don't know if that was about women's suffrage, but there were other states that kind of followed that same path where they just said, you know, we're coming in. We believe we've met all the criteria. We haven't gotten an enabling act from you, so we're just going to do it. The women's suffrage, the same thing with the 28-year-old. And as a matter of fact, if you do the research on the 27th Amendment, which was a part of the Bill of Rights, you'll actually find, and I think you'll like this. I think this will be a good giggle test for most people. The origin of the fact that that thing got ratified in 1991 or 1992 was due to the fact that this young man was chastised, got a C on his term paper in college, and was chastised by his professor. There's no way a person can do an amendment drive and get an amendment passed out of Congress. And so he realized that that amendment was out there. There was already kind of political hay going around about Hillary Clinton becoming a senator after Clinton was in office. So actually, I think it had to be 92 or after. And he went out and he just started calling legislatures to say, hey, did you know there's this amendment? And he literally convinced enough state houses to ratify that amendment. Now, he didn't get the amendment out, but he got an amendment ratified. And I don't know the context, but if you read the story, he was able to thumb his nose back and say, I proved you wrong. I can do this. We can do this. So anyway, the women's suffrage, the voting suffrage, or the suffrage for 18 years and so forth, when you look at the origins of that Congress, that wasn't an issue the Congress was dealing with. All of these issues that I talked about that came forward, I believe they were on top of the 12th Amendment, but the 11th Amendment clearly came from the states. There's no way the federal government was going to, on their own, just get rid of this, you know, this jurisdiction that the federal courts had. There's just no way that came from Congress. The states basically said, either you give us an amendment or we'll remove you and put people in to do that. Sorry about that. And so it's the same thing with the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment was caused by the states because the states were literally ignoring their obligation in fielding their senators. They weren't seating their senators in the Senate. And so, sorry about that. Somebody's very persistent in trying to talk to me. So nevertheless, because of all of these different states, they created a movement outside of Congress because the Senate itself did not want to change and go to a popular vote. They kind of liked their aristocracy. And so that was literally a grassroots movement that was paid for by progressive dollars to change the appointment and replacement of senators. The language came from, and the amendment was originated by the states, but it actually came out of the congressional path. So when you look at the path of how amendments can be submitted to the states, one is from Congress, where this Congress will basically finalize the language, what have you, and send it out. But the origins of where that came from is whether Congress acted on their own, like the 12th Amendment, or whether the state said, either you give us this amendment or we will replace you so we can get it from you. For the longest time, and even back in those days, there was a pretty, I don't want to say a large acceptance. They knew at that point in time the volatility they didn't want, especially Madison was in office at the time. They did not want to see another constitutional convention. There was enough people to go, that was brutal. We let them go down that path again, and we have no idea what we're going to end up getting. And from that point on, and that's one of the reasons why the convention of states, or I should say the anti-conventionites, you got the conventionites, anti-conventionites, the anti-conventionites use hyperbole themselves to say that was a runaway convention. We've proven that it wasn't. But they use that by fear-mongering to make everybody think that this will be a runaway convention. The truth is, and this is, I mean, people have to really look at this. How can an amendment to the Constitution stop chemtrails? How can any amendment to the Constitution stop anything that the federal government is doing? We already have that amendment. We've covered this. The 10th Amendment says powers not delegated cannot be executed. It's reserved to the states and the people. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but the point is that the whole concept of selling a constitutional convention to get the government into behaving and following the Constitution is ludicrous. And the reality is, and the only mechanism in getting government into compliance is not the convention as they lie and deceive you to say that's the only thing in the Constitution to deal with government overreach. Because they don't want you to read the First Amendment. They don't want you to understand that we have a right of petitioning for redress of grievances. Because if we actually go down that path, we'll realize that the Army can't deploy soldiers outside of the United States. If we start really understanding the Constitution and we start cleaning things up, all of these things will churn up. And people will start scratching their heads and going, well, is that a good thing? Having the draft, having the Army deployed, having the Department of Energy, having the Department of Transportation. What are the other options before we even consider an amendment? Is there a better way? Because by design, and this came out of Madison's mouth several times, that the focus of the federal government was external. They were to basically provide security and to regulate the trade. They had no real domestic responsibilities. None. Hardly at all. Maybe the navigation. I mean, they were the umpire in commerce between the states, but not to regulate within the states. So as we kind of look back to the origins of where they came from, when I say the origins came from the states, that means that those amendments originated, such as the suffrage that I mentioned, such as the prohibition. The prohibition was literally a grassroots movement of women and, you know, I'll just say religious groups that wanted to end the evil of drinking. And they got an amendment out of that. And then when the state said, this is killing us, we want to get rid of this, and they repealed it. So, yeah, you'll find that you'll get that formally it comes from Congress. But the demand, the idea, the political pressure did not boil up out of Congress like it did with the 12th Amendment. The 12th Amendment, there was no, I mean, the states didn't care what Congress was going through in the choosing of the president. They were oblivious to it. But Congress was very familiar and very, you know, well aware after the election of 1800 what they had to go through. And they said, you know what, let's bypass this whole process. And let's just change this in this way. So they came up with that amendment and did that. Does that help?
Absolutely.
So yeah, anybody can make the assertion, and technically the amendments did come from the, we call it paths, right? There's the congressional path and the convention path. Either way, the convention can submit amendments out to the states. The real question is who will conduct and who will have the authority of controlling that convention. Now, I don't believe anybody. I believe because the government has already exceeded its reach and is controlling everything, and because the convention arises under the Constitution, there is no doubt in my mind the federal government will seize control of the convention. I am an advocate of amending the Constitution, removing the convention option, because we do not need the convention to get the government into compliance, into obeying. That's the state's job. You make an amendment to say, hey, we're going to start, you know, punishing the states for not holding us accountable. Well, that wouldn't work. So we actually have to educate the states to start holding them accountable. I have been, ever since Republic Review kind of got all the kinks out and worked out, to me, I believe that once the states initiate Republic Review, they will initiate those measures and those processes that will need to be in place so that whenever Congress decides to make a law, then the state legislatures will be kind of tipped off and say, okay, this is the law. So that way the state legislatures can actually take a purview of it and go, you know what, you don't have the powers to do this, so you might as well just forget about submitting this as a law. We're not going to allow you to do that. And we'll come after you if you try to create that entity. Bottom line, wow, all of a sudden we now have an action, or I should say this overview, where you have a symbiotic relationship. Do we need to actually put it in writing, or should it not just be a process and a courtesy between the governments to say, you know what, you do have a responsibility to keep us because we are the creature, you are the creator, and so we owe it to you because our dignity comes from your sovereignty and your dignity. There is this symbiotic relationship. maybe they need an amendment. Maybe they need to have it in writing. But I, you know, I don't think we have to get there. I think it is pretty petty, and I think it's, you know, I don't trust people that don't want to do the right thing, and nobody should. Anybody that says, nah, we can't behave good, then, okay, get out of office. Get them out of office. Anyway, the other go-back that we had was basically what you had read last. And what you had read last in the Pennsylvania debate, I'm going to go ahead and read. And because we talked about this, and I don't know how far we talked about it on air because we just kind of wrapped up. But this is where Wilson basically says, but I believe it cannot be said that they thought they were making a contract because I cannot discover the least trace of a compact in that system. And I'm going to just stop right there. If you keep on going through this, he kind of uses a little bit more of his own logic to try to say it's not a contract. Then why did the Constitution require ratification? In other words, because this convention sent it off on its own, you know, the only way that this government would have formed is because our creator would have shown himself to say, make this so. And then, you know, nobody would, there would be no ratification process. But that's not what happened. What happened was they had to put a process in this so that the states themselves would actually ratify this and bypass the state legislatures. There had to be a ratification process, so you can't tell me that it's not a compact where the states actually all had to agree. They had to acquiesce to say, yea, verily, verily, we will make a federal government and we will give them only these powers, and this is how we will now conduct business as a union instead of under the Articles of Confederation. Everybody else, Madison, even Jefferson, and most all people, they all referred to it. This paradigm is an outlier. Here's the real question, though, and this is what I need to convey. When you look at what he's saying, it has no bearing on anything, what, you know, because he's not saying Article 7 and that ratification process is not a contractual process, because it is. I don't even know if he's kind of aware of those types of things. I don't know what Wilson's, you know, forte is with law, you know, theology or what have you. I have no idea where he was at that point in time with his base knowledge and expertise. But for him to say this only proves that he really didn't understand the Constitution. Because bottom line, and this is the question, folks, when a state joins the Union, are they submitting themselves to the federal government because the federal government is the sovereign, or are they submitting themselves to their fellow states who are the sovereigns? And what do you think, Sean?
I would say the latter.
The latter, absolutely. And that's why Madison brought that up several times, that states, when they join the Union, it is not a one-to-one, one to the federal. It is one to the many. It's one to the Union, where it's like, you know, it's, you know, I guess, because I like using the word marriage, because most people kind of understand that. And let's just say the, you know, the federal government is an inept, impotent, you know, just a weak man. And all of the states are women. I think women might like this analogy. And that, you know, it requires the oversight and the control of the states to keep that man in check and to basically make sure he's servicing them the way they need to be serviced. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
And so what do you think? Is that a decent analogy? Because why would another woman want to join this marriage other than the fact of the benefits of the marriage? Now, there comes responsibility of the marriage to keep that man in check. And so, and I think it's a decent analogy. It's a decent metaphor. It reminds me, we're going into a break, but it reminds me of an Everybody Loves Raymond where Frank Barone makes the comment about all men were, you know, programmed by God to sow the seed where they may, but he programmed women to keep the crop to one farmer. And so that's how it behaviorally. So anyway, after this, we'll get back into, after this promo, we'll get right back into the debates. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so putting metaphors aside, I think that what we can do now is dive into this amendment, little segment here. Let me see. Yeah, it's just a little segment. So we can, again, folks, I honestly believe in all these people. Let me go back to this one thing on the amendments. Why is it that these anti-conventionites, it doesn't matter, the Eagles Forum, actually, interestingly enough, the family divide on Eagles Forum is literally is so polarized that the one side are anti-conventionites and the other side are conventionites. I mean, they're literally picking things opposite of each other so that it gives them more to hate each other for. It's sad. It's sad. And Phyllis Schlafly is probably just going, what's the matter with my kids? Because this is a fight between the daughter and the sons. But anyhow, the anti-conventionites should be actually trying to get momentum in amending the Constitution to remove and actually educate people about using petitions. I'm going to throw this out here, and you tell me how much sense this makes, Sean. If you really do not want to see amendments and or a convention because of this runaway government, why would you not be educating people to use First Amendment petitions for the redress of grievances with your legislators to restore our Republican form of government and to get our government back into check? Why wouldn't you call for this awesome accountability of our government by we the people and by we the people's legislators at lower levels? Again, this starts at the counties. We put the pressure on the counties. Once we've taken the counties over, we put the pressure on the states. This wouldn't take long, folks, because there's lots of red counties where, because nobody understands these petitions or this First Amendment petition, this process and everything else, this is because these organizations that are all out there telling everybody, no convention, yes, a convention. Why are they not teaching people the real action of how we get government into compliance? That's a long oration of the question. Why? Do you have an idea? Wouldn't it be better to support it?
Well, because it's the paradigm they're trying to create, just like the parties. They don't want the people to actually architect anything or tell them what they want and get things right. They want their avenue, agenda, their whatever they're after. That's what they want. That's why they want the convention, because they know it can be hijacked, and if they can get enough influence, then they can control the narrative of the convention.
So in other words, they'd rather this problem persist to where we could potentially be driven off the cliff. That's better for America than solving the problem.
I didn't say it was better for America. I don't think the people that we're talking about are interested in what's better for America. I think they're interested in is better for their paradigm or their worldview or what their agenda is.
Right. And so I believe that those who listen to this show, this should be your takeaway. That should be your litmus test. If people aren't working and coordinating together in holding their government representatives, not their court, not their executives, their representatives, because they're the ones that have the power to create the laws. They're the ones that have the power to regulate the courts. They're the ones that have the power to change or enforce everything. So why wouldn't we be doing this? Why? You need to help people understand that there's only one way. There's only one path. We talk about paths with amendments. There is only one path of getting government to actually comply to the Constitution. This is why these pledges, this is why Jerry Wistrand's campaign is so important, folks. Until this show becomes the number one show and until this conversation becomes the number one conversation, we are doomed. Now, I know everybody here listening to this show is probably using every resource they have in trying to help people understand these things. I know that there's some people, and I really appreciate it, that they're probably even putting themselves into financial jeopardy and so forth. I appreciate that. I'm with you because I'm doing that myself. And I know lots of other people that are doing that. We need to start screaming. I'm not going to tell anybody, but I'll be shocked and horrified if I find somebody pouring gas on themselves in the street to say, we need to start using petitions now. And then boom, to try to get that message out. I'd be horrified if that would happen. But prove me wrong. Everybody should know, I don't say it often enough maybe, I have a character flaw. I really like being right. And so regardless of where you are regarding all the different boogeymen, the corporations, the 14th Amendment, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Any of those things don't matter. We have to start holding our government officials accountable to their oath of office and getting them to stop voting for, spending money they don't have the authority to spend, supporting departments and bureaucrats and people in offices and jobs that they have no business employing and operating and possessing. Same thing with property. We need to get government completely to, let go of all of these things that they've grabbed and stolen from us because they have no authority to do it. And I'm telling you, it's not our representatives that are doing this. They're the ones that have allowed it to happen. They facilitated. They've done their deeds. They have the power to undo everything because everything they didn't have the authority to do. And they can quickly stand up with a basic majority, 50% plus one, in every legislature to say, we never had the authority to do this. And as a matter of fact, by doing that, by actually making those declarations, that's why that's a part of Republic Review. That when the directives come from the states to go to the Congress, to both the Senate and the House of Representatives, both houses, that directive will make them sign a joint declaration that what they did, they violated the Constitution, and ergo, they will never do or assume any power, take any property, unless one, it has been enumerated within the Constitution via an amendment, period, if it is not currently enumerated. They will not do it until that amendment has been ratified. There has never been an emergency where they have actually required to do something that would actually create these governments and so forth, these things that they've done. Oh, well, we need to do this now. And actually, the urgencies really weren't there. They never were there, folks. Anyway, I digress. Let's go ahead and read this amendment thing.
I was just wanted to comment sure. that I think the parallels to the spreading of the gospel and the architecture of our founding demand that we do what you're talking about. It can't come from the top. It can't come from the states. It has to come from the people, because that's how the country was founded. And that's the intention of a Republican form of government.
Yes. Yeah. And actually go forth two by two and spread the news.
Right. Make disciples of everyone you meet.
Yes.
Exactly. And that's what we need to do. We need to make people understand that the paradigm they've been led to believe is completely false. And it's not some sneaky conspiracy theory. It's the foundational principles of the forming of the government.
Right.
And we have to get back to that. And it takes the people to change that. Just like it took the people to create it, it takes the people to reform it and reconcile it.
Right. I'm here to tell you folks that I'm not perfect. I may actually get something wrong. I may, in my age, I find, you know, that I can confuse myself. I have forgotten things. I've probably forgotten more things than most people have ever learned regarding these things. And that's a sad indictment, because people just never cared. They didn't care. As long as this facade of liberty existed in their lives, why do I care? Hey, I get to see my team every game at home, and I get to see them on the TV when they're away. That's all I need in my life. That and, you know, my family or whatever those priorities are. My point is that you may find me wrong on something, and I do have this personality failure that I need to be right. There's no doubt in my mind, when you look at this solution and the path forward and how this will actually fix everything, I beg anybody to prove me wrong. And you can't. Restore the Electoral College and we'll never have royalty for presidents anymore, or people that believe they're royalty in America. Never again. People will start realizing that when you're in office, you are serving the people and protecting their individual sovereignty and their individual liberty, their lives and their property. But I digress. Anything else you want to add?
I see a lot of people getting frustrated, people that have been in it probably longer than I have in the conversations that we have. And I just hope that people would look around and realize that you might not see that on the big stage, and there's a reason for that. The same people who have created this paradigm are not going to acquiesce. We have to talk to each other and keep each other's hope alive, just like with the gospel. Like I was saying, the gospel is our hope.
Yeah.
And hope is what builds everything.
You know,
if you have no hope, then you're just wallowing in the mud.
You know, it'd be great if some, you know, really rich person came along and actually tried to prove me wrong, just on the issue of being right. And then when they realize, because they do the due diligence, that they can't prove me wrong, and they go, you know what? I'm going to put $1 million out there to be, you know, for anybody that can prove that this is not, that this is the only way, and that this is not, you have to prove that this is not the way, that this won't do it. And when you do this, you'll actually realize that this is the only way we restore our government back to the way it's supposed to be. Now, there's some people out there that I think are probably good, you know, billionaires. And it's just sad that they don't even care. This is why I say billionaires, they find themselves, they have to corrupt themselves. They have to make compromises to be in that club. To get to that level of massing influence and money, you don't get there by being, you know, the Boy Scout. You have to basically compromise yourself somehow. Now, there may be one or two out there. I could be, you know, it's not an absolute. There may be an outlier. But in today's time, with the mores of our society, I believe the odds are practically zero. But hey, folks, prove me wrong. Get somebody rich to prove me wrong. And And because by doing that, it forces them to do the due diligence, and they're going to come away with, this is the only way. This is the only way. This, all of these other paths, the court system, that won't work. The convention, that won't work. Just basically state, single state nullification, or getting all the states to nullify, that won't do it. We have to be proactive. We have to demand. We have to exercise the political power. We are the fountain of political power. This is what Madison said several times. Many framers, even Sun Tzu said that. But he believed the power, political power, came from the barrel of a gun as well. You had to use force. That was the whole point of what he was saying. And when we, the people, actually use force by not allowing people to serve anymore because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, holding people accountable is the way. Anyway, I digressed again. Let's do this amendment now.
If we go a little further on the subject, I think we shall see that the doctrine of original compact cannot be supported consistently with the best principles of government. If we admit it, we exclude the idea of amendment, because a contract once entered into between the governor and the governed becomes obligatory and cannot be altered but by the mutual consent of both parties. The citizens of the United America, I presume, do not wish to stand on that footing with those to whom, from convenience, they please to delegate the exercise of the general powers necessary for sustaining and preserving the Union. They wish a principle established by the operation of which the legislature may feel the direct authority of the people. The people, possessing that authority, will continue to exercise it by amending and improving their own work. This Constitution may be found to have defects in it, hence amendments may become necessary, but the idea of a government founded on contract destroys the means of improvement. We heal it every time the gentlemen are up. Quote, shall we violate the Confederation which directs every alteration that is thought necessary to be established by the state legislatures only? End quote. Sir, those gentlemen must ascend to a higher source. The people fetter themselves by no contract. If your state legislatures have cramped themselves by compact, it was done without the authority of the people, who alone possess the supreme power.
Okay, so I don't think he provided any evidence that said that actually proved that this wasn't. He's trying to support this theory that this Constitution is not a contract or a compact, that it is literally a living thing by the will of the people. In other words, he's conflating exactly how because he's saying that this is very limited and defined. But he's also basically asserting that we, the people, have the power. But technically, we don't have the power. The way the governments are framed at that point, the people just can't go upon themselves and say, we want to decide, we want to make the laws, and we will tell you what those laws will be. No, this goes back to, and as a matter of fact, I don't know if you remember, but maybe make a mental note. Next year, when we go through the convention, Madison's notes on the convention, James Wilson was there, and he makes these suppositions, he makes these assertions that are probably, or not even probably, they're out there. He tends to take positions that are outliers, but bottom line, his job is to help save the Confederation and save the Union, but he does so in his own mind and paradigm of this democratic government, the we the people are in charge. That's what he's always alluding to. He's not looking that the people have created sovereign governments. That what is actually happening here is that this government, in a way, he's kind of subscribing to this government will evolve into what Madison's plan was, that the federal government would become the only government, that the states would become administrative. He's not saying anything about that here, but based on what he's claiming, based on how he's driving this point, then we can actually see that, you know, he's alluding to these perversions, these perverse concepts of a democracy and this, I'll just say this, what do you want to call this? This, and I think later on he calls it a community, or maybe we already covered that, where this is just one big community. And I don't know if they had the song Kumbaya by that point in time, but, you know, I could just hear somebody while he was talking start strumming, you know, Kumbaya. Anyway, I try not to make light of this, but I just have this really bad, you know, I call it a funny bone. I kind of always have this humorous view of these types of things. And so, I don't know. I'm highlighting these things because I want you to see and understand how this man is an outlier. Now, McKean, a little bit different. He doesn't get up and make the same kind of assertions and so forth. And I'm kind of wondering why, other than the fact that Pennsylvania was an outlier state. You know why? I think you know why.
Because of the structure of their legislature?
No, actually because of the people. What is the predominant faiths in Pennsylvania?
Quakers.
Quakers and?
Were the Puritans there?
Well, no, the Puritans were up in Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
They also had, because most people don't know this, when the Constitution went from Continental Congress out to the states, there was only one state that had the Constitution printed, a large, like 700 copies or something like that, in German, that went to Pennsylvania. So it was a mixed culture, and it wasn't this, you know, Anglican culture. Pennsylvania was not an Anglican, you know, vestige. The Quakers and I'll call them the Protestants, because these were more of the Germanic Protestants of, you know, Martin Luther, the Lutheran, you know, side of that. So anyway, let's go to the next one. This next one actually does, I believe, deal with commerce. It wasn't just a note of commerce, but go ahead.
Suppose a war was suddenly declared against us by a foreign power, possessed of a formidable navy. Our navigation would be laid prostrate. Our imposts must cease. And shall our existence as a nation depend upon the peaceful navigation of our seas? A strong exertion of maritime power on the part of an enemy might deprive us of these sources of revenue in a few months. It may suit honorable gentlemen who live at the western extremity of the state, that they should contribute nothing by internal taxes to the support of the general government. They care not what restraints are laid upon our commerce, for what is the commerce of Philadelphia to the inhabitants on the other side of the Allegheny Mountains? But though it may suit them, it does not suit those in the lower part of the state, who are by far the most numerous. Nor can we agree that our safety should depend altogether upon a revenue arising from commerce. Excise may be a necessary mode of taxation. It takes place in most states already. The capitation tax is mentioned as one of those that are exceptionable. In some states, that mode of taxation is used, but I believe in many, it would be received with great reluctance. There are one or two states where it is constantly in use, and without any difficulties and inconveniences arising from it. An excise, in its very principles, is an improper tax. If it could be avoided, but yet it has been a source of revenue in Pennsylvania, both before the Revolution and since, during all which time we have enjoyed the benefit of free government.
Interesting. Interesting. One of the things that you need to note, or that you kind of covered, and I'm not sure if you got this, he basically identified this problem within Pennsylvania. And he said, it may suit honorable gentlemen who live at the western extremity of this state that they should contribute nothing by internal taxes to the support of the general government. They care not what restraints are laid up upon our commerce. Does this, we're talking about Western Pennsylvania, because that's what we say, Western extremity. Does this kind of lend to a, or give you a glimpse of, you can't be surprised of what's going to be coming in 1794, in 1792? Right? I mean, he's helping identify this, what we can identify as this rebellion towards supporting the Constitution and or supporting the taxes and so forth. They care not. And when the whiskey tax went out there, that's exactly where they had the rebellion. Interesting. Interesting. It's just a little highlight I just noticed when you read that, and I go, huh, yeah, they don't care. Or we will prove that they don't care because they'll actually say we're not paying. Okay, so let's go back or down a little further into this three quarters of a page on supremacy or supreme.
Do we have time to do all that?
You know what? We don't have time. Actually, thank you very much. We got about 2 minutes. So anything you want to add to or cover that we've kind of talked about as far as amendments, as far as, you know, go back to the metaphor, the marriage thing, so forth. I mean, polygamy is not a favorable, you know, concept in America at all.
I think that's a dangerous metaphor you use. You might want to scratch that one.
but the reality is, that's kind of how it is. I mean, the man is impotent, weak, and, you know, what have you, and the women have to control him to some extent. Or maybe he's just stupid. Maybe he's too strong for him, you know, his own good. And he's, however you want to cast this, that the women in the marriage have to control that one man. Anyway, I understand that it probably will upset people, but the point is to try to get a way of understanding this concept of a union and the one to many. That when you're joining the marriage, you're joining with your fellow brothers and sisters, or the sibling states, however you want to look at it. Anyway.
Liberty in Christ. That's the way I look at it.
There you go.
And it amazes me. I know I keep saying this, and it's just the parallels between liberty and how it's flourished and under what conditions it flourishes, and the scripture and the spreading of the gospel, and how our values intertwine with that. And how do you spread the gospel? You spread it amongst the community, amongst the people that you see and talk to, and that's how we have to spread this message. I think we need to flip the paradigm, because there's been so much brainwashing and indoctrination. And I heard somebody talking about this yesterday in a podcast I was listening to. I think it was Matt Walsh, but how the indoctrination has become reality to people.
Okay.
And we have to change that and get people to understand. And just like you're saying, prove you wrong. It's not even really about proving you wrong. It's about reteaching these fundamentals,
right?
Just like the scriptures and just like spirituality and being in Christ. It's not about all these formal rules and regulations and works. It's right. About the spirit of it. And
if all right. We're going to be completely cut off. Thank you so much. I completely agree with you. Amen, my brother. God bless. And folks, I'm Jerry Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.